Welcome to This Is Money. I'm Georgie Frost. Stand alongside editor Simon Lambert, and me today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And coming up, are banks triggering a mortgage credit crunch by pulling loans to those with the smallest deposits? First-time buyers will be the hardest hit, but there is hope. With all this going on, the reopened property market is seemingly in rather rude health. Why is this? Are properties that didn't sell before coronavirus going back on the market at a higher price because sellers expect to be asked for a discount? We have some better news in theory, as even rubbish savings accounts are beating the price of inflation. Plus, as Britons get used to the idea of holidaying at home, we're splashing our cash on hot tubs. But be warned of scams. Don't forget to stay up to date with all this and the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first-time buyers have been hit by a mortgage crunch as banks and building societies pull small deposit loans. The latest blow came as Britain's biggest building society Nationwide confirmed yesterday that it would not be offering mortgages to those without at least a 15% deposit for the time being, unless they were already customers. TSB, they also say no, but they could still benefit first-time buyers from little loan deals linking to a family member's home or savings. So, very warm welcome, lads. First of all, Lee, what's going on with Nationwide and TSB?
Well, Georgie, we are seeing the vast removal of low deposit mortgages. So what that means is first-time buyers typically have a 10% deposit to put down on a home. So let's say a house for 250 grand, that'd be a £25,000 deposit. What's happening is a lot of these sort of 90% and 85% loan to value mortgages are being pulled by lenders, by, I would say, nervy lenders who are worried about what the future is of house prices, both short term and long term, thanks to coronavirus and its impact on the market. Now, Nationwide has decided to pull its 90% LTV. TSB has got rid of its 85%. And these are two pretty major lenders to first-time buyers. And it just narrows choice down. It makes it more difficult for the first-time buyers to get onto the property market. And part of this will just be because they are seen as riskier. You know, they're seen as riskier borrowers. And these mortgages take more time to underwrite because of the risks involved. So they're a bit time-consuming. And what these lenders are saying is that, you know, they're focusing still on their existing customers more than anything. And things like staff shortages, you know, and a struggle from working from home and that big shift is still causing a bit of a backlog in the market. Now, what we're hearing is some of the big lenders are offering 90% LTV. So, for example, HSBC. HSBC, in fact, has been offering some of the best rates for quite some time now, especially for first-time buyers. But they are releasing just a limited amount of these mortgages per day. And brokers are telling us that these are getting snapped up at 8:30 in the morning. And it's almost like a raffle style system to get one of these mortgages. How true that is, I'm not sure. But these are worrying signs for a slab of people that have basically helped prop property prices up in the last few years. You know, there's been a lot of first-time buyers, a lot of buyers that have relied on things like Help to Buy to get a leg up onto the property market. We've seen house prices rising, not as fast in the last few years, but I would say in the middle part of the decade, they went up pretty quickly. So we're still at a point where house prices are, you know, historically high, and things are getting tougher out there for first-time buyers.
Simon, is this triggering a mortgage credit crunch, do you think?
Well, potentially. If we talk about the credit crunch, we refer back to the financial crisis and the thing that caused the financial crisis, which was that credit suddenly dried up. Banks had gone on a wild lending spree, cheap money dished out to pretty much anyone who could sign their name on a piece of paper in some instances, fueled by an investment boom as people bought risky mortgage-backed bonds in the belief that there was no way that the US housing market could crash across the entire country at the same time. Something that seemed very strange to those of us in Britain who were aware that, yes, house prices could fall nationally all across the country at the same time, but America is a very different place. Now, we don't have that situation at the moment in terms of all of the investing madness that's been going on. But what we do have is we have had a bit of a credit boom in recent years in terms of very, very low rates and banks being very, very eager to lend to people. We'd seen a resurgent 10% deposit mortgage market, 5% deposit mortgage market, banks finding ways to get people to be able to borrow the money, to get them through the affordability tests. So giving people longer and longer mortgage terms. So we've gone from 25-year mortgage terms to 35-year mortgage terms to 40-year mortgage terms. All about squeezing people into the box marked, you can afford this mortgage, so that the watchdog would be happy and the bank could lend the money. Now, since the coronavirus crash hit, banks have suddenly gone, oh yeah, we don't want to do that anymore. Actually, we're a little bit concerned about this stuff. And so they've been pulling a lot of mortgages. We've got some figures here. These are some This Is Money figures. This is the first time these This Is Money figures are being aired. We asked MoneyFacts to look at the number of mortgages available at different loan to value figures, and we calculated the percentage of deals that have been axed. So if you've got a 20% deposit, compared to the 1st of March, yesterday on the 18th of June, 20% of the available deals on the 1st of March have been axed. It's not too bad. You've still got quite a lot of choice, 570, in fact. Now, if you've got a 15% deposit, you will have seen 49% of the available deals on the 1st of March now axed. That's starting to look a bit squeezy, a bit crunchy there. If you've only got a 10% deposit, you will have seen 90% of all the available mortgage deals axed. And if you've got a 5% deposit, 96% of them have been axed. Now, this isn't Credit Crunch Mark 2, because Credit Crunch Mark 2, Credit Crunch Mark 1 was a very, very different thing to this. But there is definitely a serious issue here that people cannot get a mortgage who may want a mortgage. Now, there might be a shortage of people who want them to move home at the moment, so it may not be too much of an issue, but there are still people who want to move home who might be being crimped by this. We keep hearing all this talk of how everybody wants to move out of the city and out to the countryside and things like that. Well, if you've got a 10% deposit, it's going to be a lot harder. There's also an issue for people who are remortgaging. And that was the big problem in the credit crunch last time round, is that people who'd been told, don't worry, take a 2-year fix, you'll be able to remortgage in 2 years' time. Rates might be even better then. Take a 2-year fix. And then they got to the end of the 2-year fix and they discovered that rates had actually got marginally better because they'd been slashed due to the financial crisis, in theory, but that actually lenders weren't offering them mortgages anymore. And they were having to go on to the standard variable rate, which was considerably more expensive. And in fact, you started to get a big gap between the big deposit mortgage rates and the small deposit mortgage rates, which has not completely been eradicated, but has been squeezed down a bit since. But the next step might be that that gap starts to get bigger again and bigger and bigger. And if people can't remortgage, then you've got a real issue, because people can take a decision not to move home, but they can't take the decision not to remortgage because they risk going on to a much more expensive SVR. Things are slightly different this time, though, I think, in terms of the expectations around the banks and how they're expected to treat their customers, and some of the rules that have been put in place.
With that in mind, Simon, therefore, what will kind of long-term impacts or medium-term impacts be? I don't want to say in comparison, because this is a very different situation to the financial crisis, but given all those other things you're talking about, I keep asking you these things, short-term blip or long-term issue?
Well, I guess what we're going to see now is a very interesting scenario amongst all the other interesting scenarios that we're seeing in this most unprecedented of unprecedented times, to use the most unprecedentedly popular word of the unprecedented moment, which is, are all these systems and checks and balances that were put in place by the banks at the behest of the Financial Conduct Authority in recent years actually going to work? So are the affordability checks that have been imposed on banks and building societies with the stress test, so that people could afford their mortgage payments if rates went up to X, going to work? Does it mean that actually when we have this big recession hit, which, sorry, the big recession that is hitting at the moment, but it isn't technically a recession yet because we haven't had the figures. Are we going to see people protected by those affordability tests? Or is there going to be something that we missed? I mean, one thing that maybe we missed is that it's all very well checking if somebody can afford their mortgage if all of a sudden their rate shoots up and, for example, they get stuck and have to go onto the standard variable rate. But that relies on them having the same income that they had when they took out the mortgage. What if they don't have that income anymore? What if they've been furloughed and their income has dropped substantially? What if they lose their job? Obviously, then the affordability test based on their salary at the point when they took out the mortgage isn't going to work that well. Banks showing forbearance. Now, there's a very different scenario here to the financial crisis. I don't remember after the financial crisis, and this was the time when I was writing about mortgages, the government coming out and saying, we would like you to give anybody who asks for it a 3-month mortgage holiday. And then saying towards the end of those 3 months, we would now like you to give anybody else who asks for it another 3-month mortgage holiday or extend their mortgage holiday. So it's they're basically saying, no, you must not repossess people. You must not put them in default. You must give them a mortgage holiday if they ask for it. So there's that scenario going on. And also related to the fact that we haven't just been chucking money around quite as easily as we were. I mean, if you go back to 2006, the sort of peak at the tail end of the credit boom, a lot of people were taking out interest-only mortgages in order to stretch themselves to buy a bigger property. When I took out a mortgage then, and I was asked specifically by the broker, are you sure you don't want to take out an interest-only mortgage? Because you know they're cheaper on the monthly payments. You could actually spend more money and get a bigger place. And we didn't. We took out a repayment mortgage. Now, lots of people got lucky because rates were reduced by so much in the financial aftermath of the financial crisis or as it was taking hold, that they kind of, the moral hazard, as Mervyn King often referred to, was removed. And because otherwise they basically just would have been stuffed with those big interest-only mortgages. Now, everybody's been taking out repayment mortgages. Now, the difference between a repayment mortgage and interest-only mortgage is that you're paying off some of the loan. So actually, over 2 years of your mortgage, even if you started at a 95% loan-to-value, you will have chipped away, and you will have shifted yourself down the line. And with a little bit of house price inflation, which we have seen, it might be that you're now an 85% loan-to-value borrower. So all of a sudden, you might not be facing the exact same squeeze that you would have been in the past.
Lee, what's your take on all this?
I'd like to pick on a few points that Simon mentioned there. Actually, I think one of the big factors about 35-year, 40-year terms, which have become almost normalized in recent years. You know, most people would expect a 25-year term mortgage. That was kind of, you know, your standard term. That nudged up to 30 years. I've had a lot of friends, I would say, in the last 2 years who have asked me about mortgages. No idea how a mortgage works, which firstly, I think, highlights quite a bit of lack of financial education. The fact that people don't quite get to terms of what it is and how it works, which, you know, I don't blame people. Unless you've gone to buy a home, you probably wouldn't have ever read about the mortgage market because you wouldn't have been interested. But unfortunately, I think that a lot of people, especially in my age group and a little bit younger, have been tempted into a 35-year, 40-year mortgage, which is almost like the equivalent of the interest-only mortgage there that Simon was talking about. I feel like this is the next thing that's been going on in order to, you know, bring down monthly payments, but not quite grasping the fact that they are going to end up paying more interest over the period on that property. Now, if you're taking out a 40-year mortgage in your early 30s, I mean, I don't know, that's a long old term. Just a stretch to get monthly payments down to be able to buy a home. And on that note as well, we're talking about a lot of first-time deals being pulled. Having first-time buyers is key for the market. You know, it unclogs the rest of the market. You know, the so-called second steppers, which is a term I absolutely hate, in order for them to move up, you know, the property ladder, they need someone to buy their home. And the likelihood is it's going to be a first-time buyer, and that goes up the chain. So, you know, although it might not look like absolute disaster territory that some a lot of first-time buyer deals are being pulled. Those figures that Simon said are absolutely extraordinary. 90% of deals, you know, for a 10% deposit have gone. Now, what that does for the rest of the market and how much that clogs up the market throughout the rest of the year, well, I can see it causing all sorts of problems, because there's one thing wanting to sell up and go and buy somewhere out in the country if you're bored of your perhaps your first home, but if there's no one there to buy it for you to then buy that property, you know, there's all kinds of effects, that knock-on effects that go on there. So I think this is some actual quite worrying signs. Again, it remains to be seen if this is short term or not. You know, will things go a little bit back to normal when perhaps people, bank workers, you know, brokers, all that sort of thing, are back to work permanently, you know, perhaps back in offices, back where they've got all the equipment that they need, perhaps they're not having to, you know, share childcare, all those kind of things, you know, firing at all four cylinders, you know, will deals become available again? And let's face it, the last 5 years or so, mortgage rates have been absolute rock bottom. I mean, we have seen some absolutely mad rates, and that includes people with 10% deposits. Unfortunately, things can't always last forever, Georgie, you know. And you know, I'd like to think that people have made plans when rates have been this low to do what they can to perhaps pay off mortgages and all that kind of thing, especially at a time where we've seen savings rates absolutely plummet at the same time. But I don't know, this for me just rings out clogging up the market. If you don't have first-time buyers, I'm just thinking about a nightmare scenario where you're buying a home and you hear those horrible words, "there's a chain," and then you hear those horrible words, "it's a five-person chain." You know, so if there's no one at the bottom of the rung to push it up, I don't know, worrying times.
With that in mind, though, with everything we've said, it seems that actually home sellers are rather optimistic at the moment. Moving on to something else that you've been writing about, they're bumping up asking prices, and this is despite of all the coronavirus issue. This is according to new figures from Rightmove. But posh estate agent Knight Frank also said, and this is what they've said, by the way, that they had the best ever week outside London, with buyers flooding back to pricey country properties after the lockdown property freeze. Now, we spoke about that podcast or two back again, so do listen to that. But offers accepted outside of London, they say, highest on record, and more than 50% were above the five-year average. So given everything we've just been talking about, why does this reopened property market look or seem so buoyant?
It's been driven by the green shifter. Georgie, these are city dwellers that are looking for bigger homes out in the country with, you know, big gardens, you know, being cooped up in their small London penthouses, and now they're looking to get out into the country. But no, in all seriousness, you know, people have been pushed from this pandemic. We keep hearing this, that they're looking for places with bigger gardens. You know, perhaps places like London and Manchester and Birmingham, if you're living closer into the city centre, you might not have an awful lot of space by square footage. You might not have a big garden. And I think a lot of people have put gardens at the top of their priority list. Now, a couple of reasons for that. It's obviously that lockdown has meant that we haven't been able to go out and live our normal lives. And the weather has been absolutely phenomenal throughout sort of April, May, and there's probably quite a lot of people out there that thought, if they didn't have a garden, oh, if only we had a garden. You know, being cooped up inside and having a garden now has become one of the big things. And it's not just a low maintenance garden, you know, something that's quite easy to upkeep. Some people have been looking at for acres of land, you know, essentially to grow vegetables, have vegetable patches, to have livestock. You know, they like the idea of that kind of lifestyle away from living in the city. And perhaps a lot of people now also thinking, hold on a minute, I could do my job from home. And a lot of workplaces are saying, you can do your job from home. You know, you don't need to live near an office in a city. So people thinking, oh, you know, perhaps I can move out, you know, as long as I can get good Wi-Fi and do my job from there. So I think these kind of factors are nudging up some property prices of, you know, perhaps sort of bigger detached homes, and that's filtering through to the whole market. But as Simon and I have had this discussion quite a lot in the last couple of months, you know, what does demand mean? You know, what does some of these stats mean? You know, we've seen the Office for National Statistics has pressed the pause button on its property price index. we've seen Halifax kind of saying, here's a price index, but to be honest with you, it doesn't really mean much, which I thought was great. And Nationwide saying that there was, you know, a couple of percent drop in values over the course of a month. But at the moment, it's so hard to paint a picture in my mind of what's happening to property prices and what's going on. It's very much, I would say, on a local level. And if you're looking to buy a home and you have a target town or area in mind, you know, you can only really gauge what a property market's doing by looking at previous sold prices, by looking at, you can go on a property listing and seeing how much a property might have been listed before and not sold for perhaps last year, all of those kind of things to make a decision. But ultimately, as always, a home is only worth what someone's willing to pay for it.
Well, that's it, Simon. I mean, is that it? Are we getting, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, people just bumping up prices expecting that they're going to be offered a discount anyway because of the current situation, that these prices don't really mean that much and the interest is just perhaps too many episodes of The Good Life being watched during lockdown?
I like to think that people have spent lockdown watching episodes of The Good Life. But I think they've just been watching that soft porn film on Netflix, haven't they?
What's that?
That's what I've been reading. Keep reading stories about it. Polish art house movie or something.
No.
I haven't seen it.
Just basketball things for me. Anyway, yeah. But I'll make
yeah,
a note
yeah, they've
that,
either
Simon.
Been doing that or watching Michael Jordan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, the thing about the property market and stuff that comes from estate agents is you've got to take it with maybe a little bit more than a pinch of salt, maybe half a salt cellar or something like that. Estate agents are by nature optimistic people. They have to be to sell houses. You might get the odd rogue one who's a grumpy so-and-so who tells you the house is crap and you probably shouldn't buy it. Some of them built careers out of it. I believe there was one guy, there was one very famous estate agency, I cannot remember the name, okay, in the past, that used to write very famous adverts that used to go in the Times, basically just slagging off the properties that they were selling. But most of them are optimistic. A house will be blessed with its attributes, and so on. There'll be lots of flowery copy in the advert, and they'll take you round and they'll show you the double bedroom that you might be lucky to get a box in, and so on. And so when it comes to reporting figures and about how the property market's doing since it's reopened after being shut up over what is effectively their busiest period, they're going to tell you that things are going really, really well. And actually, it's amazing. And to be honest, I imagine there was probably a fair few gloomy estate agents over April and the end of March and the start of May. And they've been, and I dare say that some of them have been pleasantly surprised. And you cannot disregard all of this, however. The UK property market is like the Terminator. It just keeps coming back and coming back and coming back. You can't kill the damn thing off, right? So Knight Frank has reported that it had its best ever week for agreed sales, which is something, you know. But Knight Frank is not representative of property purchases in the country as a whole. Knight Frank is one estate agency. Knight Frank is one estate agency that specializes in selling upmarket, expensive homes that are, quite a few of them are trophy assets. And if they're not trophy assets, you need quite a lot of money to buy some of them. Most people aren't going to be buying the kind of home that gets listed by Knight Frank. Rightmove said asking prices are actually up on where they were at the start of March. But you would expect asking prices to be up on where they are at the start of March. There's a seasonal effect. Asking prices tend to rise over the spring months. More people bring their property to market. Bizarrely, because of the way that the market works and because it's sellers who set the prices and agents trying to get houses on their books, when you get more supply over the spring period, prices go up. Normally, when you get more supply, prices go down. But this is the property market. It doesn't work in a normal way. So there is a natural effect going on. Now, you might think that sellers would go take a look back at what's happened in the country over the last 3 months and go, if I really want to sell my home, maybe I need to put it on for a little bit less than I would have done at the start of March. Maybe stuff isn't quite as good as it was at the start of March. But, you know, people want as much money as they can get. And they think, if I aim high, I can always give someone some money off. And we have identified a phenomenon of properties that were previously on the market for less money, now going back on the market for more money, adding an extra 50 grand on. in the expectation that buyers will want a deal. And so the seller can take 10% off. If the seller puts the asking price up by 10%, they can then take 10% off and make it look like the buyer's getting a deal. But, you know, Rightmove did say stuff is up, activity has been higher than they expected, but a total of 40,000 sales have been agreed since the market reopened a month ago. But that is down 36% on the same period last year. Okay, that's the important figure. That number of sales, even though it's better than expected, is 36% lower than it was over the same period last year. And agreed sales are not houses sold. Anybody who's ever bought or sold a house knows there's an awful lot of stuff that can go wrong between the bit where you have your offer accepted or you accept an offer and the point where there is exchange of contracts and everyone's locked in, or completion where the keys are handed over and that is now sold, counts as a sold as a transaction. And we just spent the start of the show talking about mortgage lenders pulling mortgages, etc. What you go house hunting, you make an offer, the seller goes, great, this is awesome, I put my house on the market after lockdown, I've got a decent offer, that'll get me what I want to move, awesome, we'll accept that offer. The buyer goes off to the mortgage broker goes through the numbers, goes and looks at the mortgages, I'm sorry sir and madam, we can't actually get you a mortgage, or we can get you a mortgage, but it's going to cost you this. And the people buying the house go, oh, hang on a minute, we can't afford that house now. All of a sudden that sale was agreed is no good anymore. As Lee said, chains, all it takes is for one person to fall out of a chain. And all of a sudden you can have four or five agreed sales suddenly stuffed. So things are definitely looking better than we thought they were going to look now. I've never failed to be surprised, but maybe in 6 months or a year's time, they won't look quite so rosy. Maybe
I was going to ask you about that just briefly in terms of when we are likely to know. You say a lot of this is tough, isn't it, from very optimistic estate agents, but when are we likely to get these sorts of figures of just how impactful this period has been?
When you go out at the moment on your permitted excursions, most of the economy is still sort of shut or half shut. We had the shops reopen this week. All the pubs and everything else are still shut, right? You cannot help but notice that people just appear to be continuing on as normal, despite the, you know, 10 million people furloughed and the wave of redundancies, the 20% decline in GDP, all these things are being talked about. You get the feeling that it's a bit like when Wile E. Coyote runs off the cliff in the Roadrunner cartoons, don't you? And he sort of stays there with the legs spinning for a while before tumbling down. It might be that that's going on, or it might be that there really is something in this whole V-shaped recovery. People are really eager to get out there, and actually they haven't suffered financially as badly as we thought. We had a downgrading of the cost of the furlough scheme the other day because it turned out that the people who've been furloughed were earning less money than had originally been thought. And so there's going to be less of an impact on the economy due to that. You know, people, there are plenty of stories of people who are saying, oh, actually, I've saved money during lockdown because I'm just not spending as much. Mm-hmm. We live in a consumer economy. And if you stop consumers being able to spend money, it's very bad for the economy. But it does mean that those consumers do actually build up a bit of money, and maybe they feel like they want to splash out. And maybe going out and buying a house, moving home is part of that. But people, you know, there's an argument. Nick Train, fund manager, said that he expects a burst of hedonism once the lockdowns are over. Mm. People are going to go out. They want to go out and have a good time. So this, maybe this is just part of the fact that we are going to see this V-shaped recovery. Or maybe it's Wile E. Coyote running off a cliff. Who knows? So
who
there
knows,
you go.
Indeed.
The property market is either the Terminator or Wile E. Coyote.
I like it. I like your cultural references there, Simon. I will also say that it's amazing how much money you can spend at your local supermarket and in gym equipment that you've not used all lockdown. But talking of savings, well, if you have saved a bit of money, you might be thinking, where can I put this money? And you'll be looking around and feeling rather disappointed. However, some green shoots, sort of, I suppose, really. More than 600 savings deals, Lee, now match or beat inflation. This is after prices rose by their lowest level in May since the 2016 Brexit referendum. rates still record lows, though, so not the most amazing news. But with the consumer price index measure of inflation standing at 0.5% in May, 4-year low, fourth successive month in which inflation has fallen, according to the National Office for National Statistics, it does mean that at least you would not have be losing money in 600 savings accounts.
Georgie, this is green shoots with a flower head on the top that needs deadheading. I'm afraid this is not green shoots. This is the savings market has been absolutely decimated in recent months. And yes, we've seen CPI slip to 0.5%. The reason for that is, well, firstly, they're finding it hard to measure the usual basket of goods that they would usually have in there. And we've seen things like petrol prices come falling, crashing down. You know, it's leveling out a little bit now. Cheaper games and toys, you know, people basically anything to entertain the kids is piling in and buying cheap toys to do that. And that means, you know, we've seen that the CPI level drop. Now, you know, long-term target of CPI is 2% from the Bank of England. Mm. Now, we ain't going to be seeing anything like that in the savings market, I would suggest, at least in the next year, probably. I can't even give you a time period. Whether or not inflation can, you know, get back up to that kind of level again, we're not too sure. But I would have thought that has more of a chance than you getting a savings account over the next 12 months that is going to beat inflation. But, you know, that said, there are 600 accounts that beat inflation, but 0.5%. is the inflation rate, Georgie. I mean, you start talking to people about getting a savings account that pays between 0.5% and 1%. I think people just go, yeah, I'm not too sure about that. And we spoke about this on the podcast recently. Marcus Bank, the Easy Access darling, you know, has gone because so much money flooded in there, and people are running out of places to go. And the more people pile into the Best Buy account, you know, the more likelihood that account's going to go, and it's rinse and repeat, and these accounts are disappearing at an alarming rate. National savings and investment at the moment are top of the charts for easy access accounts, that both ISA and non-ISA. But, you know, they have inflows and outflows that have to be carefully balanced. You know, the likelihood is if more money piles in there, that's going to disappear soon. And we've done a story today, actually, about cash ISAs. George Nixon, our savings reporter, we've discovered that the Best Buy cash ISA rate now, easy access without any catches that allows transfers in of previous year's balances, is 0.65%. That is a Best Buy with no catches on the easy access market. So, you know, we can say that these accounts are inflation busting. But again, talking about the cash ISA market, the best rate you can get on a cash ISA now is 1.4%. You have to fix your money away for 2 years. We're at a point now where 5-year fixed rate ISAs, the best rate is 1.1%. Yes, you heard that right. You get a less.
Why would you do that?
A smaller return over 5 years than you would over 2 years. Well, you wouldn't, and that's the thing, right. You know. But it's just indicative of where the market is going. These rates are getting pulled left, right, and centre. We've got a stat here in February, CPI was 1.7%. There were just 39 savings accounts that beat inflation, and that has obviously gone up quite significantly. But it is worth pointing out here that you might be able to beat inflation for this month, but going forward, it's anyone's guess as to whether your account will stay inflation busting. I think people at the moment, savers, are just, you know, absolutely struggling to find somewhere to park their cash. You know, we saw it in March and April when there was a stock market turmoil. A lot of people just turned to traditional savings accounts, you know, just as a place to park their money, to put their money that's going to have protection limits in place. You know, there's a lot of nervy investors out there. That's why we saw places like Marcus Bank just swamp with cash. You know, you think that is a massive organization that can suck up deposits, you know, en masse. That's gone. A lot of smaller providers now are at the top of the charts. If they start getting flooded with cash, they can't take on much more cash. And then Bosch, there's more accounts gone. It's just a race to the bottom at the moment. We've talked about a race to the bottom for a number of years, but coronavirus has accelerated it drastically.
Be that as it may, Lee, options are limited, but we do want people to save. What do you say? What will you do?
I think now more than ever, someone asked me the other day on Twitter, you know, what would you do if you had no income and, you know, how do you, if you lost your job, what, you know, what would you do? Now, the point of savings for me, we call it, you know, the rainy day fund, but at the moment, it's crucial that if you're fortunate enough to be able to save some money away, tuck some money away, having a savings account, no matter what the rate of return is, can be crucial for things that happen in your life that you might not have ever predicted. Losing your job is obviously the obvious one, but you know, things might happen. Boiler might break down. You might have something spring up, car repair. You know, you don't want to be having to rely on credit. You know, that's the thing. That's the point of having savings. And I know it's very difficult to tell people that don't save to save, because they might not have the money to do so. But you also have people in another camp who do have money to save. They probably do have disposable income that could go be tucked away, but they're just put off because rates are so low. My message to them would just be, put money away. Yes, rates aren't great, but it is worth doing. You know, just because rates are low, it is still worth having a buffer, a safety buffer of cash. In my mind, that's my personal opinion. And yes, you're not going to get fantastic returns on it, but at least you've got it there to rely on if you need it.
I couldn't agree with you more. As someone who's been in a position where 10 years ago, serious injury, I mean, this could be serious injury, it could be coronavirus, it could be anything that comes into your life, which means that you can't work, you need savings. I didn't have them. I was very young and it was a very difficult time. And so I've made sure that is not the case nowadays. But, you know.
Exactly. And also, Georgie, it's worth pointing out here as well that there are people that are falling into different camps from this coronavirus outbreak. There are people that have obviously lost their jobs and finding things very difficult. There's also a slab of people that have seen their costs come right down, you know, still in employment, but are not commuting, are not socializing, they're not paying for holidays, they're not doing a load of things that they might have done otherwise, and now have quite a sizable amount of cash that they didn't have beforehand. They're going, hold on a minute, I've managed to sort of save some money here because we haven't been able to do much. You know, I'm pretty certain what the government will want to stimulate the economy is for people to go and splash out that cash on things like hot tubs. But at the same time, you know, the sensible thing is to tuck that money away, because who knows what happens from here to the end of the year, to the end of the year, to the end of next year. It is well worth putting some of that money away.
Exactly. It's going back to the whole V recovery. And if we don't get that immediate bounce back, this is going to last longer than just lockdown might. But I like how you teed us up there beautifully to the next story. It seems that with millions of us stuck in our homes for months on end, we are spending more keeping ourselves occupied at home. That may be things like home improvements, gym equipment that I've not used. Gardening equipment sale also gone up. But so too have, and I have to say, this hasn't been one that's crossed my mind, but hot tubs. Sales have gone up over 1,000% on eBay, and these things are not cheap. You can spend up to £10,000 on one, which I think is rather extraordinary. Is this a sign that we've come to terms with what Lee was suggesting last week, that perhaps, you know, a holiday in Blighty this year might be the better option, and that's what we're spending our travel money on, a little treat at home? But of course, with increased in anything, we're seeing increased scams. But before we get to the scams, Simon, were you tempted at all?
I uncovered this piece of information. Yeah, I know. There you go. Hot tub detective. Chief investigative hot tub reporter. So I am hoping to go on holiday later in the year, later in the summer. And we're going to stay somewhere. And it's advertised as having a hot tub. It wasn't actually, there wasn't the deciding factor of going to stay there. It was just a part of the thing. But they said that what you need to do is you need to organize it from a company that does the rentals yourself. So I was like, okay, all right. So I called up this company. It's a company called Norfolk Spa and Leisure. Now, as I was chatting to the lady on the phone, I asked her, you know, how business was, sort of, you know, how are things going? You know, I guess been really hit by this. She said, well, actually, the holiday lets business that we do has obviously been severely hampered, but we've been really busy. I was like, what? She's like, yeah. Initially, we were quiet. Then we've had a big surge in people wanting to rent hot tubs. But she said, we also do sales, and they've been selling like hotcakes. There's a waiting list. You can't get your hands on them anymore. There's not enough supply of hot tubs, and people are having to wait maybe until September to get their hands on a hot tub. Britain has gone on a hot tub buying spree in lockdown. You've got to love being British, haven't you?
Describe one. Is it like I think either paddling pool, not swimming pool, somewhere in the middle, or a bath outside? Like
for anybody who hasn't listened to the show before, until a few weeks ago, Georgie lived in a very strict convent in the Swiss Alps, where they weren't allowed to know about decadent things like hot tubs. We're talking proper hot tubs here.
Expensive, aren't they?
Okay, so we're talking about expensive, like rigid, hard hot tubs, you know, like a proper plastic hot tub. You can either get them built into like your decking or a surround or something, or you have them standing up above it. You can get wood fired ones. You can get ones with a little stove attached. You've also got these inflatable ones that what they're like the lazy
paddling pools
or whatever they're called. No, not a paddling pool. They're deeper than that. You've got the hot water in there and people sit in them and they like to enjoy a drink. They don't necessarily have to have pampas grass in the front garden and invite the neighbors around to put their keys in the hat before they get in. But these are hugely popular. People love to have them in their garden. And apparently the phenomenon is involving people getting money back from holidays. So that holidays they couldn't go on, family holidays that might have cost them a couple of £1,000, right? And then they get the money back, or not, as the case may be. There's a lot of people still fighting for that money back. But a lot of people have had quite a lot of money back from holidays. Then they haven't even gone on the holiday. So they haven't spent the spending money. So actually, they've now got a big chunk of money that they were expecting to spend, and they've looked at what's going on, and they've gone, well, we're going to be stuck in the house, and we're going to be out in the garden, and should we buy a hot tub? Can't go on holiday. Let's get a hot tub. So they're going out and buying hot tubs. They're also going out and buying other expensive stuff for their gardens. You can't get one of those expensive pizza ovens for love nor money at the moment either, and they cost a couple of £100. I mean, again, maybe this is V-shaped recovery in action. Yeah. I do not know, but what I do know is that we, Grace, I got off the phone, I emailed Lee, I emailed Grace, I said, this is a good story. Apparently, hot tub sales are absolutely booming. Britain is spending lockdown in a hot tub, or not, as the case may be, because they're going to have to wait till September. We looked into it, eBay gave us the figures about how sales have risen, and it is a thing, it's a phenomenon.
You've peaked as a journalist, Simon, with this story, honestly. I think it's all downhill from now. Like, this is...
I know. But what can I say? I just, you know, Britain has gone hot tub crazy.
Amazing. Lee, I haven't got one. I had a bath the other night, but...
Yeah. No. I quite fancy one of those, like, sort of barrel-shaped, like, little home saunas that you get to put in your garden.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more...
Can I tell you
what I'd really like? I'd really like an outdoor kitchen. I was barbecuing. And
sorry,
you know when you're running backwards and forwards from the kitchen to the barbecue. I thought I'd love an outdoor kitchen.
Yeah,
this is my favourite 5 minutes of podcast ever. Just listening to Simon talking about hot tubs. I mean, I'm wondering if we just do a hot tub special now, where we all just sort of get in one and record a podcast once we can all socially distance. Although I do, it does make me laugh whenever we, as deputy hot tub reporter, write about hot tubs, because our readers in the comment section are always very, very, very critical of hot tubs. And as someone that lives in the hot tub heartlands of Essex, glitzy Essex, where a lot of people do like hot tubs, and I do hear quite often the bubbling of a hot tub somewhere in the vicinity in my neighbourhood. I don't know where. There's definitely one around. They are a nuisance. The sounds, people flapping around in them, music playing, God knows till what time. Yeah, I'm no fan. And actually, we should point out here, there's been a massive rise in scams involving hot tubs, in which our reporter George has gone with a great headline, which is a hot tub crime machine, in reference to the film that came out a decade ago, Hot Tub Time Machine. And it's one of the top three biggest rises in scams, according to NatWest. So we've got hot tubs in there. We've also got Nintendo Switches, so people being hoodwinked into sending money over and not getting the device. And also pets. There's been a huge surge in people basically forking out for pedigree pets that are either not pedigree or just run off with their cash and they don't, you know, because they haven't been able to go and visit the pet because of lockdown, a lot of people are losing their money that way. And it's the same with hot tubs. People have been looking to buy one from reputable places. It's been very difficult, as Simon says, because there's been a massive flood of people wanting to have holidays in their gardens, you know, pimping up their gardens with, you know, all sorts of pizza ovens, hot tubs. I've got neighbours that are camping in the garden, probably because they can't go and camp anywhere else. Mm-hmm. You know, all sorts of gadgets and things being spent, you know, in the garden. And what's happening is people are taking a chance, perhaps transferring cash to someone, you know, on a website outside of using that website, thinking that they could, you know, perhaps get ahead of the queue and get a hot tub installed pretty quickly. And unfortunately, according to NatWest, quite a few people have fallen victim to scams involving transferring money to get hot tubs. They're at 400% scams involving hot tubs last month. So there we go. There is interest out there, Georgie. But if you're interested
in there's always scammers, aren't there?
If you're interested in getting one, I would say there's going to be a few alarm bells ringing. Basically, a lot of companies, as Simon said, saying that they're not going to be able to get them out until September. Now, I'm not sure about a hot tub over the winter months, depending on the setup of your home. I think, you know, getting out of that hot pool into icy Britain doesn't sound that appealing to me. And also, you know, you just want to make sure that you take all the necessary steps. You know, it could be a big purchase. It can cost as much as a used car. So, you know, treat it with as much caution as you would as any other big purchase. Don't just think, oh, I want this hot tub next week. So what I'll do is I'll take a chance with this guy. He just says, transfer this money to me and he'll get it to me next week. Probably ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Hot tub. I don't know.
Just get in the bath.
I can't see the...
Get in the bath.
In a way, yeah. And I'm Scandinavian.
Shower attachment and get it in the bath. Make your own jacuzzi.
There is some irony that at a time when everybody's locked down due to fear of a contagious disease, they're all getting into a hot bowl of soup.
Yeah, exactly. It's not sensible, people. It's not sensible. On that note, you can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app if you've bought a hot tub. And if you have any comments or questions on unhot tub related for the team, anything you'd like them to look into, Simon?
You can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. You can tweet us at thisismoney, or you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to join in the debate in reader comments.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.